Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Monday, July the 10th. In the last 10 minutes of the program, we're going to be talking again about Charlie Gard. In this case, not so much about the question that many seem to be concerned about, which is what kind of treatment should a terminally ill baby receive and how far should doctors go and will it be beneficial or not? Those are important questions, but maybe more central to all of this is who makes that decision? Who possesses the authority to make that decision about, well, anyone who isn't able to make a decision on their own? In this case, Charlie Gard is not able. Story, of course, is heartbreaking, and it's one that has the world's attention gripped and fixed upon this couple and their terminally ill child. And the doctors say, at least the doctors that seem to control the situation say, well, there's nothing more that we can do and there's nothing more that anyone else should do. The child may suffer more. The President of the United States stepped in and he said he would help. The Pope himself has stepped in along with the Vatican to say that they would be willing to help. And even doctors in the United States and elsewhere are saying, we're willing to help. The parents, it's not a matter of money for them. It's simply a matter of getting the permission. And what stands in their way are other authorities, in this case, the British government and the courts. We're going to be talking about this case. Joining us to do so on this Monday afternoon, Dr. Melissa Mascella, Assistant Professor of Medical Ethics at Columbia University and author of the book, To Whom Do the Children Belong? Parental Rights, Civic Education, and Children's Autonomy, and a column for the Public Discourse titled Parental and Governmental Authority in Medical Decisions, The Tragic Case of Charlie Gard. Dr. Mascella, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just from the perspective of medical ethics, how bad is this story?
Well, from a medical ethics perspective in itself, there really isn't a right or wrong answer about what to do with Charlie Gard in terms of the actual treatment plan, either giving him further treatment or taking him off of life support, recognizing the extremity of his condition. Either of those would be ethically acceptable options in principle. The trouble with this issue is the failure to respect the authority of the parents as the default proxy decision makers for Charlie. You know, if you think of a case in which you have an adult who has been able to appoint a proxy or express end-of-life wishes in a living will, for instance, their wishes would be followed without question unless what they were asking was clearly unethical or unless there really were no resources available to do what the patient requested. So in this case, it seems cut and dry. The automatic proxy for a child is the child's parents. And so there's no reason at all for the state to be getting involved here.
So what kind of arguments are the state, the doctors, and the courts making that are preventing the parents of Charlie Gard from making and executing this decision on the part of their child?
Well, the doctors and the court agreeing with the doctors are saying that Charlie's condition has deteriorated greatly, that they believe he's suffering and in pain, although they don't really know whether or not that's true. They believe that further treatment will just prolong his suffering, and they think that given how bad his condition is, even if that treatment has some benefit, it still won't make his life worth living. So they think that a more dignified way of dealing with this situation that's more respectful of Charlie is to just let him go. Obviously, that's a huge value judgment that reasonable people can disagree with. In fact, clearly millions of people do disagree with it given the public uproar about the case. So really, they're just substituting their own controversial judgment to the judgment of Charlie's parents, and there's no warrant for that.
Do the doctors possess, in your thinking, any part of this decision about the future treatment of Charlie Gard?
The doctors certainly have the right to refuse to provide a treatment that they believe is unethical or that they believe would cause more harm than good to a patient. So if the Ormond Street Hospital doctors think that, as they say that they do, then they shouldn't be forced to give Charlie further treatment. But nobody wants to force them to do it. The parents are simply asking to be able to take Charlie to another doctor who's willing to give the treatment.
What role, in terms of decision-making, should, if any, the British government, the British courts have?
Honestly, in a case like this, they shouldn't have any role at all. If it were a matter of medical neglect, abusive parents, or something like that, then the government could step in. I could think of cases here in the United States that have been controversial with, for instance, Jehovah's Witnesses who don't believe in receiving blood transfusions and have sometimes denied sometimes life-saving medical treatment to their children because it would involve a blood transfusion. In cases like that, the courts do sometimes intervene because even though the parents aren't intentionally harming their children, they see that the issue here is that the life of the child is at stake, and so they may intervene, overriding the conscientious beliefs of the parents to save the life of the child. Now, though, I think those are hard cases, but I can see why the state would intervene in that case, because you're dealing with saving the life of a child whose life can clearly be saved, and the state does have an interest in promoting and protecting human life. But in this case of Charlie Gard, what they're doing is the opposite. The parents want to continue with treatment, and the state is telling them, no, it's not worthwhile. Your son's life has so little quality that you should simply let him go.
Is the state, in this case, the British government, is it in violation of its own principles in some sense, or at least in terms of kind of broader principles of human rights, in not so much in having an opinion, but in enforcing that opinion in this case?
Absolutely. I mean, the British government, like most Western democratic governments, operates in principle as a limited government, a government that respects private decision-making on the part of individuals, a government that respects lower-level decision-making authorities, like local communities or churches or families, as in the case here. And so it's certainly going against that basic principle of limited government and doing the sort of thing that totalitarian regimes do. Obviously, the British government is far from that, but it's a kind of hallmark of totalitarianism, as we saw with Nazism, as we saw with Stalinism, as we saw with Mao's China, to eliminate any intermediate authority between the individual and the state. And that's what happens when you eliminate parental authority and just have a direct government authority over children. But there are also some legal issues, specifically in the European Convention of Human Rights and also the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Both of them embrace a kind of basic principle of the primacy of parental authority and also a basic principle of a right to privacy and a right to family privacy in terms of decisions that you make about your own private life or about the life of your family, as long as those decisions aren't threatening the public good or the rights of others.
One of those documents that you quote in your piece for the public discourse actually uses the language of, I think, prior right to choose, and I want to focus there on that adjective prior.
Right.
That it comes before any other authority's precedent. Talk about that.
Exactly. Yeah, the language of the Universal Declaration says that parents have a prior right, and in that case they're talking specifically about education, that parents have a prior right to choose the education of their children. That speaks to a broader sort of primacy of parental authority in general in terms of decisions about upbringing and care of children. And that idea of being prior is that this is the family unit is a unit that exists in a sense by nature prior to the state, prior to any government authority, and it has decision-making authority over its own internal affairs. That, you know, in a sense, you could think of the place of a family within a broader nation-state as analogous to the place of any particular nation, United States, the UK, whatever, with respect to the whole international community. They're broadly agreed upon rules to respect the sovereignty of each nation over its own internal affairs. And the international community or a body like the UN would only intervene in the internal affairs of, say, the US or the UK if those nations were doing something that was either an egregious violation of human rights to its own citizens or if they were threatening, you know, the peace of the entire international community. So analogously, in terms of the family with respect to the broader political community, the family is a kind of little sovereign community with autonomy over its own internal affairs, and the government shouldn't be intervening coercively unless what the family is doing is akin to, you know, an egregious human rights violation that would be like abuse or neglect on the part of the parents, or is something that really threatens the public good. If the family refuses to provide any education for the child, or the family refuses to give the child any medical care and is threatening the child's life, things like that, you'd say, okay, you know, the public good is threatened, or this is abuse and neglect, and the state can intervene coercively because parents are not clearly not fulfilling their responsibility. But in all the other cases where reasonable people can disagree, then it's up to the parents to make those decisions about what's in the best interest of their children.
Finally, I think you write about the scope, the implications of Charlie Gard's case, and you write this, I want to know what you mean by it. You say, there is frequently a fair amount of uncertainty and controversy in medical decision-making. The court's intrusion in this case sets a precedent for extremely broad state interference with parents' decision-making regard to medical care for their children. Even further, it sets a precedent for state intrusion in all medical decision-making. What do you mean by that?
Right. So my point there is that if what's really going on with the Charlie Gard case is the question of who has the right to decide, and the state coming in, usurping the authority of the parents, who are clearly the default proxy to decide on Charlie's behalf, then how do you differentiate that from the case of, say, an adult who has made a controversial decision about medical care on his or her own behalf, and the state says, no, you're crazy for trying that experimental treatment, and besides, the resources are scarce, so you know what, we're not going to let you do that, you're better off, you know, just letting yourself die without further pain and suffering, or an adult who may have expressed such wishes in a living will, or expressed such wishes to a healthcare proxy who's then making those decisions on his or her behalf. Again, if the state can do this and intervene in the case of Charlie Gard, why not in any of those other cases? Because the principle is the same.
Finally, then, with about 30 seconds, what would be the proper course, in your opinion, of action here with respect to the parents and their decision-making for their own son?
I think that the parents, it's a deeply private, intimate family decision, and only the individual parents in each individual case can make a tough choice like this. They are the ones who know all the facts. They're the ones who know how this is going to impact them. They're the ones who see Charlie and see perhaps whether or not he's suffering or whether or not they have a sense that he has potential to improve. So I really think that it's such a tough call that only those people with that deep, intimate acquaintance with the facts can call the shots there.
Dr. Melissa Muscala is Assistant Professor of Medical Ethics at Columbia University, author of the book, To Whom Do the Children Belong? Parental Rights, Civic Education, and Children's Autonomy, and a column for the Public Discourse titled Parental and Governmental Authority in Medical Decisions, The Tragic Case of Charlie Gard. You can read it and purchase To Whom Do the Children Belong at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Mascella, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss the medical diagnosis of gender dysphoria with Walt Heyer. That diagnosis is coming earlier and earlier in the lives of Americans. So early now that we're talking here about children who have been diagnosed with gender dysphoria. What you might not know is that the medical experts here, the psychologists, psychiatrists, the doctors, they can't tell you what's going to happen 10 years from now in the life of that child who may be confused and may be deeply troubled. And moving toward sexual transition is the most harmful thing that can be done. We'll talk about that with Wald Heyer, and we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Isaac and Rebecca from Genesis 24. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.